This week on the program, it is the start of the 2021 We Love Movies Month, and we're kicking things off with a real bang. It's Casablanca. I'm Andrew Jupin.
Steven Sadak.
Eric Siska.
At least a cabin.
And we love movies. Hello, all you fine folk out there. Welcome to We Love Movies. Thank you for tuning in as always. That's right. We're talking about a big one. It's Casablanca from 1942, directed by Michael Curtiz. You may know him as the director of The Adventures of Robin Hood.
Great movie.
Captain Blood.
Hell yeah. Great movie.
The Seahawk.
Hell yeah.
Good movie.
And then one of my all-time faves, Mildred Pierce.
Yeah. Ooh, great yeah. stuff.
He did two sea movies, Seahawk and The Sea Wolf. That's the
Sea Wolf. What's that? A dog falls in the ocean?
That's exactly what it is. How did you know that?
Was that a Bonnie Prince Billy album, The Sea Wolf? Did I mix that up?
Probably also. Okay, I think it's an Edward G. Robinson movie. Very good.
Falling in the water. Do it's a Bonnie Prince Billy singing.
Now, Matt, could you just play for like an hour?
Don't play those old Bonnie Prince Billy songs, Sam.
Look, we did.
That's how I fell in love with my wife back at the Pitchfork Festival.
Look, we did Super Wolf. We did Super Wolves. Now it's Sea Wolf.
Yeah, and the next Curtiz picture, I'm doing a voice of a dog falls into some water.
Bark, bark. Bark, bark.
Oh, no. Don't play that Arcade Fire song, Sam. My heart can't take it.
I told you not to play Reflector anymore. You know why.
It's really when the band fell apart, honestly.
Disagree. That's a great album. This is one. So what is the count now? To bring back an old gag, this two?
This is numero dos
what?
Ooh, of nice. Me seeing Casablanca.
Oh, right. Okay.
Very early days in the show. The show's been running, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Sometime around now, 11... Goddamn year.
It's always running.
We're into year 12.
Technically, we're into year 12 right now.
Check your watch. We Ate Movies is running. Better go catch it. Go download it. Oh, wait, you already did.
We are full of food as well.
Earlier on in the show's run, there's a bit where I would say, oh, I saw this silly movie that we're covering, but I've never seen Casablanca. And sure enough, my wife put a stop to that pretty early on, and I finally watched it. It was great. But I never went back to it because I don't really go back to a lot of stuff these days. I don't have a ton of time unless it's Clerks, which I watch every year for no reason.
Do you really watch Clerks every year?
No, like I actually just rewatched it like a couple of weeks ago. And I'm like, because I was just like kind of burnt out. I was like, I just want to watch something. And I was like, why am I watching this again? Didn't I watch this last year?
That would have been great with Bogart, you know? Like, you
suck 27 dicks.
Yeah, on your way to your parking lot, don't suck any dick.
I wasn't even supposed to come in today.
See, that's the thing. That's what drives me nuts about this movie, in a good way, I guess, because he's 37 years old, the character.
It was amazing.
And he's lived such a rich and vibrant life. And meanwhile, my generation, not even my generation, the one right before, Dante Hicks. That is like the highest you could strive for.
Noich, smoking blunt, doing weed. What do you say there, Silent Bob?
Oh, Silent Bob, would you like to making fuck berserker? Peter Lorre. Salsa shock.
By the way, this is just, it's only my second time seeing Casablanca. FYI.
Yeah, got it.
Put that out there. It is the Christopher Lambert impression, essentially.
Yes.
Because but he does sound like that.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
It's a great voice.
It's a great voice.
It's the same voice.
He looks like that guy.
Peter Lorre.
Looked like.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's the difference, is Peter Lorre never tried to be dashing.
Yeah.
God bless him.
He knew he looked like a scumbag.
I would say he was probably the most handsome child molester I've ever seen.
Was he a child molester?
No.
I didn't check his personal life section on Wikipedia, but I feel like there's a very large paying for it section.
Fritz Lang's M. Maybe that'll be the, maybe we'll do that next year.
Oh my God, dude. It's just us eerily whistling for an hour and a half.
Although I do feel, Eric points out this, I do think Pierre Lorre had to point out,
No, on screen, I child killer. No, no, no. I understand what how I look. No, no, no.
Stop
no.
writing that M on my back in chalk. That was from a
You're
movie.
Ruining all my coats.
I guess that was like a Freddy.
Here you go, Mr. Lord. Oh,
yeah. Are you kidding me? I went to the museum. I wanted to check my coat, and someone put an M on it. It's hot in here. I didn't want to be sweating in the museum, and now my coat is ruined.
Who just goes around with chalk ready to do such things?
It's M for murderer, right? Because it's not, he's like more of a Freddy Krueger. Because it's like, we're not showing kids being diddled. It's like,
I mean, that wasn't invented yet. Yeah, we were just killing.
Yeah. We were kind of walking around in that movie, I think.
I don't know the implications.
It's been a while.
Yeah. I mean, he's definitely killing children.
Yeah. Oh, God. God bless him.
That fucking balloon going up in the air, man. That's so great.
No, that just means they walked away. You see that? No, that's very innocent. I understand you misunderstood it. They just walked away, had a good time.
No, she dropped the balloon. She just let it go by accident. We are going to the zoo.
You have reached
Peter Lorre.
I don't know. I was doing that earlier today, and I don't know why that makes me laugh.
Believe it or not, Peter isn't at home. Please leave a message at the beep.
It would be at the scream, by the way. Yeah,
did you hear this, boys, that Peter Lorre got into frolf? It's half frisbee, half golf.
This was supposed to be the summer of Peter.
I was just staying in his apartment eating a block of cheese.
What's with those sweatpants? It's, you know, much like Citizen Kane before it, and It's a Wonderful Life. Like, how do you do an episode on some of the most famous films ever produced in Hollywood? Mm-hmm. I guess we'll see what happens here. If you are unaware, this is a movie really, really hitting home on some World War II criticism while World War II going on. Gotta love it, which is amazing.
Right? I feel like now, because like if you think about how like the way Hollywood responded back then, very patriotic with the war effort or whatever.
Right.
Nowadays, you know, I don't really, you know. Because it's just
you make something like Zero Dark 30 years after all that specific incident of torture happened.
I mean, it got greenlit like within a couple weeks of the Pearl Harbor happening. It happened right after that.
But
it would be cool nowadays if we got an attack and right after we get like Captain Casablanca or like Thor Casablanca.
The media in the 40s wouldn't do like meet new dashing white nationalist, you know, George Lincoln Rockwell or whatever, or Adolf Hitler or whoever was hot at the moment.
But I mean, we did have a spate of that in the early part of the Iraq War. The early quarter of it.
Oh, God, right. Like
Rendition and
Lions for Lambs.
Yeah, yeah. I'm thinking.
That was the Tom Cruise as a senator type of thing.
Jarhead was kind of that, but not really.
I mean, that was the first Storm.
But it came out at that time for that reason.
Hurt Locker was great, though.
I'm going to say, is that the only good, even great movie of that ilk? Maybe. Of like sort of early, like 06, 07.
You know what has aged well is Stop Loss.
Okay.
I thought that movie actually, I went back to it. It's really good.
Which one is that?
It's Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Channing Tatum. They're all like they are on break like before redeployment.
I vaguely remember
Boys
that.
Don't Cry director did it. Kim Pierce, I guess, I think her name is.
Some of these movies are, you know, critical of the government, I guess, and these movies are very gung ho. But I mean, you're fighting World War II. It's different.
Stop Loss. The whole point is like, war destroys you.
Yeah,
it literally like kills your life and makes you not want to live it anymore. So like I think you were getting less and less movies about we shouldn't be doing this.
Yes, yeah.
And more movies of like, look what it's doing to our boys.
Mm. I mean, I think this movie's not so gung-ho. I mean, it is. And I mean, you could definitely read it as patriotic. That's still not propaganda, but I mean, like, it doesn't exactly like the Americans don't save the day. You know what I mean?
Also pretty easy to be like, Nazis are terrible.
Yes, yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, it's brave-ish at the time, you know what I mean?
I mean, yeah, the bravery is, we won't turn you into the Nazis, okay? Oh, God. We promise. Shit.
I mean, I guess it's also like even the most cynical American can come back to the fold. And
yes, that's a good point. Yes,
right.
That's a good point.
Yeah, man, Rick, what a guy.
Oh, man.
I love that. Like, I need, you know, I'm going to go, and this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship. I'm going to go back and shell war bonds. That's what you should do, folks.
See, that's the thing, right?
It doesn't do that.
But those movies exist. You watch like old Hollywood things where like, in the opening credits, it's like, better go buy war bonds. Now the motion picture brought to you by Jack Warner. Like, whatever. This is absent of all of that, which is nice.
Well, it's all focused on him specifically. He's like a jilted love. I mean, like, it's like, you know, I didn't want to get into war again after I got my heart broken World War I. You know, I don't know if I want to go back out there, put my heart on the line again.
The character of Rick is amazing because he's such like an enigma. Wrapped in a riddle.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I just love that all those little nuances, like everyone calls him something different. There's Richard, there's Rick, there's, well, boss, I guess, boss, but that's more of a...
Yeah, Mr. Blaine, I guess, in some circles.
But it's he's a really interesting character. And again, like this time I have my little notebook out. I really watched it. I think that like it's a great anti-hero. You know what I mean? Like he's not... I mean, he's heroic, but
he resists the call. He's not sticking out his neck for anyone.
Exactly. Like Han Solo-esque, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. It's a complex character, which is nice for a leading man. It doesn't happen too often anymore.
No. Like, hey, Chewie, we're home.
Like, you actually have to, the character actually has to change his mind. Like, that's like very few movies are actually hinging on that one point. They usually are just like, you really don't believe this, right?
Yeah, come on,
do the right thing.
But that is kind of what's incredible about the end of this movie is this dude turns down a lady friend because he knows that her leaving will help support the French resistance, the resistance on the whole. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's like, that's fucking great. I supremely love that this movie has a bittersweet ending.
It's not a
sad ending. It is just a straight up awesome bittersweet ending.
Yeah.
I'm going to go on vacation with my cop friend. We're going to hide out for a little bit.
You know? My incredibly crooked cop friend who is like extorting ladies for sex. We're going to tamp that down, but it's absolutely in this movie.
It's all over this movie. It's
Claude Rains just doing that quick tie check in the mirror in that one scene. Yep.
I'm going to be needing a literal and figurative wingman here because I don't know how to fly.
I do love... So that's the thing. It's like... I really think it's Peter Lorre's voice because he's no less scummy than fucking Claude Rains' character here.
No.
But it's just like...
You could argue he's better.
That guy just bugs me. Because he starts with, you know, he's like, you despise me, though. He's like, yeah, no arguments here. And it's just like, this other dude is like really extorting ladies for sex.
What was it? It was something like, if I thought of you, maybe I would despise you.
It's, my God, get damn.
Quiet, Rick. You're getting me hard when you talk like that.
I read that Lori and, you know, the fat black market guy, Ferrari, and the pickpocket are supposed to be coded as Italian. Just to loop in some more access powers.
Get some of the fascists in there. Yeah, I mean, the dude's name is literally Ferrari.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought that was obvious from the, like, there's those two flunkies, the Italian and the French, are like, I like Adolf Hitler more. No, you like Adolf Hitler. Going back and forth. Like, no, I love him the most.
Those guys are great. They're funny. Coming off the, when they're picking up Major Strasser at the airport.
Oh, yeah, that dude rules.
Yeah, Conrad Veidt.
Totally.
I have one of his mustache hairs. Yeah, I have that. What do you have?
Oh,
nothing.
My God. Imagine we could clone that.
Well, they kill it every day.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, torture
you just
it.
Hold it in your mouth to feel closer to him. Oh, my God. All just to have the DNA in your mouth.
I'm not a big fan of hair and mouth.
No.
Generally, no.
No. Foot and mouth, you totally
I get that every day.
Yeah. I love the opening. I love a good map.
Yes.
Oh, my God. The smoky globe and everything. Oh, yeah. Like, we're going to, like, pretend it's clouds, but it's just like they're just smoking cigarettes in the room. I imagine.
It was just the collective crew all smoking at the same time while they were trying to light and film.
Boys,
this globe.
Could you quit it? You're fogging up the map.
Nah, boss, don't you think it looks kind of neat? Look at it. It's like a foggy earth or something.
All right. I said just no cigars in here, just cigarettes, okay?
A light day. Some dude with one of the big Homer Simpson World's Fair cigar. But it's so great because they're talking about how, you know, the way a lot of folks were escaping the Nazi regime to get to America was this, you know, big circuitous route to get to Lisbon, Portugal. and he would get on a ship and go to America. So people escaping Paris specifically is Paris to Marseille, across the sea to Oran, across the little desert there to Casablanca. I think about that every time. Not just when I'm watching the movie, if just the name Casablanca appears somewhere in my head, I just go, to Casablanca! Solid announcing by whoever this guy was.
Casablanca is essentially limbo in this movie.
Yes.
You're waiting to find out if you're going to move on to heaven,
right?
AKA Lisbon.
When you should have been killed in World War II, you appear in Casablanca, and it's like, do you get called up to heaven? That is America for some laughable reason.
And then you talk to John Locke, and you see what he knows about this
I mean it's a great setting for any piece of drama, like they do you know, obviously, like there's the announcing in the beginning is very economical and gets you right into it, but like once you see the denizens of this city, like people trying to sell for diamonds and like all these desperate, miserable people,
all the things people are doing to get exit papers.
Yes, exactly.
Right? It's totally fascinating.
Well, it's like you're miserable on vacation, which, you know, everyone's can relate to. Like you stay one extra day and you're like, fuck, or your flight gets delayed and you're like, shit, I just want to go home.
And it's the perfect like waiting, obviously, you know, and so we have to stay in a single location, mm-hmm. more or less. Perfect for drama, perfect specifically for stage drama,
yes.
which is what this was, based on a play called Everybody Comes to Rick's. I love holding patterns situations,
yes.
like this. And it's like, because that's also very economical. We got the cafe. We got Ferrari's Blue Parrot, other cafe. Mm-hmm. We got the police station, and that's kind of it. And then like the marketplace.
And yeah, the marketplace for sure.
And that's about it, yeah. Curtiz, he's a great director. He uses all this so well. Like the actual space he gets in these places, like it's not flat. That's the problem with all these movies that are based on plays.
Yeah.
Is that everything feels very flat. Like you don't have any sense of space about being in the room you're in. He gets around that like beautifully.
Yeah. And you know, some people have like criticized like the lack of interesting camera work in his work in general. But like you look at this movie and like the reveal of Rick is amazing. And the camera moves when it moves, pay the fuck attention. Other than that, it doesn't, you know, it's like maybe two or three shots.
It doesn't feel static, to Chris's point. Like it does feel full and rich.
The Bogart reveal is a fucking all timer.
Absolutely.
Even when you watch it, it's actually better when you watch it multiple times knowing what it is, because it's that anticipation of like, where's Bogey, and it's like the shot of him signing the check. This is how I want to start signing checks, by the way. Okay, Andrew. You see him write it and you see the hand and then it like pulls back and up and there he is in all his fucking leathery glory.
Follows that cigarette up to the catcher's mitt.
Fine, you win, Humphrey Bogart.
So we are told that there were some German couriers carrying some exit visas and they were mysteriously murdered in the night.
It's kind of interesting. Like, you know, the whole like these exit papers signed by General de Gaulle can't be questioned. Can't be, you know, it's just like, wait, why do these Germans have it? It's a
golden ticket. It's exactly, like Willy Wonka's golden ticket.
Exactly. What I'm saying is they should do a prequel film called Rogue Zero about stealing these but I guess it makes sense that Germans would have exit papers that are French signed by de Gaulle that maybe they could give to a spy to use or something.
Or it's all just a money thing. I mean, because I think
everything's corrupt.
In this movie, Peter Lorre is also playing German.
Yes.
Yeah.
Am I wrong on that?
I think he's Italian.
I had read that he's supposed to be playing Italian.
I mean, it doesn't sound particularly German either.
I don't know. I think it's just the swamp of Europe.
I'm just playing the creep.
Yeah, exactly.
Check under your shoes.
I mean, it's hard to separate Peter Lorre from his history in the German film industry.
I mean, I would have loved, you said it now and I can't stop. Rogan One would have been it ends with like, Strasser takes out a fucking lightsaber.
Mm-hmm. Just starts wasting fools.
That's where he was before this.
It's like, wow, why didn't Strasser just waste everybody in the next movie? Why was he more stilted in the... Oh, I don't know.
Because I am classy. I am a classy general.
I read that there is a prequel slash sequel novel.
You sent this link and I read the like description. Sucks. Dumbest fucking thing I've ever heard of.
Well, we get confirmation that Rick is Jewish or something. So clap, clap, clap.
But, how much money did the author of this give to Trump?
Well, he worked with, funny you mentioned, worked with Breitbart. So, but anyway, the novel's called As Time Goes By and details them trying to kill some Nazi after the events of the movie. And it's just like, I don't fucking give a shit.
It's sort of like a two timeline thing where you're getting Rick in New York, like before the events of the film, and then directly afterwards, where he and Louis and Sam go to France, like they go back to France and they're trying to help Victor Laszlo, and Ilsa's like a fucking spy doing it is horse hockey.
She's like a honeypot for some like Nazi general, and I'm like, why is this, why didn't anyone think this was a good idea?
Cool fucking fan fiction, idiot.
Exactly. Yeah,
we're like the A-team, me and Sasha, you know, we find the documents, we get the guns, and Sam plays the piano.
Oh my
just
god,
just does that all the time.
Sam great in this movie. Dooley Wilson.
Yep.
Yes.
Which the funniest fucking thing I read in eons was how he got his stage name of Dooley, where he was apparently he got nicknamed that while working in Chicago, because then his signature Irish song, he would do an Irish song called Mr. Dooley, and he'd wear whiteface and pretend to be like an Irish drunkard or whatever.
What? I love it.
It's fucking great.
I want to see this. Can I right? see this?
No, you can't. I would love to see that as well. I don't know. Maybe it exists somewhere, but I don't think
he's
so.
He's been dead for 70 years.
Look, get Doc Brown on the phone. Yeah. Look, this is more important than fucking McFly.
Marty, we got to go back in time. We have to see Dooley Wilson do whiteface.
I don't know why. This fat guy just wanted to.
I mean, I feel like he's going to be disappointed.
But him playing an Irish guy was so popular that changed his name.
Truly. Something.
Well, that's the thing is with that, especially with vaudeville, I guess you want to be like, oh, that's the guy that does the Irish shit. Get that dude. Like, it's in his name. God. Now I know.
I bet it was great, too. I bet it would be.
Go get
fun.
Me Sam Shillelagh.
Sam Shillelagh.
I do love just like this one dude gets shot in the back, and this other guy is just there's vultures all around, vultures everywhere, just pickpockets those old fucks.
That dude's awesome. Yeah, no, I love the guy. They're like, oh, where's your papers? And he's like, oh, I left them. Oh no, they're right here. And then the guy's like, yeah, these are expired. And he just tries to make a break for it. He is assassinated. You see. He has papers. He's a member of the French Resistance. Yes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that it's awesome because there's people waiting in Casablanca to escape. And then there's just like fucking rich people who are there on vacation, like this old couple. And the guy's like, oh, I seem to have left my wallet at the hotel. Wait a minute.
And then just criminals, the lovely, lovely criminals. And, you know, I'm not always about like it, you know, it was better back then or anything. In this particular situation, it was. These fuck like diamond exchanges going on, all this like little the document. Here's your passport, your secret passport. What do you got now? Here's your jerk off material in this fucking the cafeteria next to the bodega.
Oh, I have all these NFTs that I'm using to launder.
No, just you.
Oh, Rick, I just need some NFTs so I can pay to get out of the country. No. This ape smoking a cigar. Just hide it in your piano, and then I will be, don't screenshot it. Oh, shit.
Well, listen, Major Strasser, no one knows where the ape smoking the piano is, okay?
Here is your fake fentanyl. Enjoy the hot bar downstairs.
Yeah, you know, criminal activity maybe a little more interesting.
So much more interesting. You're right. Now it's just doop doop dop on the computer. No one's putting the FaceTime in to get out there in the streets and be shot.
Got
to
doop doop dop, see? The arrival of Major Strasser, he's a big deal Nazi official, and he's greeted this, like you mentioned, Eric, played by Conrad Veidt. He's met by Captain Louis Renault, the great Claude Rains, the Invisible Man himself.
Yeah,
king.
Who I think is just fucking totally great in this movie. But yeah, everybody comes to Rick's. We get right there.
Yeah.
And it is, man, I'll tell you what. I was watching this movie at like 9 o'clock this morning.
I wanted a fucking glass of champagne and a pack of cigarettes, and I wanted to like play some cards.
Yep.
This movie, the atmosphere that is created inside Rick's Cafe American is fucking awesome.
Yeah, it's
and
great.
That's direction. Direction isn't just camera movements. Yes. It's not like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not flashy shit. It's actually, if you feel something in the shot, that's direction.
That would be nice. Yeah. It's nice that Curtis went to those troubles. I mean, the fuck, like, the thing with Renault is I'm like, when was the last time you remember somebody being so joyfully corrupt?
Mm.
Like, it's such a perfect pitch. Like,
Donald Trump?
Like, no, because, like, he was always like, oh, they're after me. Oh, they're
yeah, that's
get,
true.
Like, he's always
yeah,
paranoid
he was a bitch about it.
Yeah, he was always that. But no, Renault's just like, yeah, corrupt as hell. Fuck
he's
you.
He's smooth, man, you know, and he's like a playboy and stuff.
I love it.
It makes it hard to hate him.
Yes.
Yeah.
Makes Which it really should. Hard. Like when the crimes are laid out, he like murders Peter Lorre pretty much no reason.
He murders people. He coerces women into sex. He betrays and backs. He's an average French guy.
Regularly sending friends to the hands of the Nazis. And like that should tell you about what exactly the mood of America was probably right up until Pearl Harbor.
Yes.
Was right. Kind of like, yeah, that's bad, but eh.
And I mean, at this point, it's like this is still unoccupied France. He doesn't have to do shit for the Nazis.
Yes, right. But he knows
the prevailing
where the
winds.
Is.
Yes. You know, he knows where it's going to go or that's whatever.
Right. That's right. Yeah, I love right here at the beginning. There's so Rick's has the secret like casino in the back room, and it's fucking Humphrey Bogart like refusing this German guy access, and he's like, but I've gambled all over the world, you tell me I can't come to your little pissant bar and gamble, and he's like, yeah, that's right, fuckface.
I mean, this hidden room, it's like a door that has a sign that says gambling inside.
No, it says definitely no gambling. Yeah, I mean, because that's the thing, right? You're in a place like Casablanca in the fucking 40s. You kind of don't have to hide that stuff. No. You have to hide that stuff.
Yes. And then this is when Peter Lorre shows up and he kind of explains to Rick that, you know, I guess he knows that something's going to go down. He's got a buyer coming in. You know, he's going to sell all these papers and like make well, and Rick will get a finder's fee if he just holds on to him.
Right. And this is where, you know, he's like, oh yeah, exit papers, huh? A couple of krauts got offed with some exit papers I heard about earlier today. You wouldn't know anything about that, would you, scumbag? And he's like, no, I promise I do not. The great thing is he goes, he says, like, after the you despise me, don't you? He's like, oh, you think I'm a parasite or something like that. Bogart's like, I don't mind a parasite. I mind a cut-rate parasite. It's like, you are not even good at being a scumbag. That's what he thinks of this guy.
I want to know how he murdered those German soldiers, though. Really.
Right?
He whined them to death.
Yes.
You put that in the prequel film, right?
Yeah. How did Ugarte get those papers?
No ticket.
Well, that's all. Oh, yes, I'll definitely follow you to wherever you want to go. But first, can I mix you a drink?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, these were just men, you know, these couriers are just mailmen, really. Maybe seduce them or something, you know.
I like that.
Any number of things.
Please, let me show you to the bathroom.
Opens it up and it's like one of those train cars. He just pushes them out.
It's a big toilet. Just go in.
The desert is kind of a big toilet. It's like a big, like, kitty
litter box.
Yeah, like a kitty litter thing.
Man, taking a shit in the desert, that's got to be something.
It's got to be really unsatisfying.
Been doing it,
dude. Been for a long time.
Yeah.
Unsatisfying, you say?
Just all the dry fucking sand going up your ass.
I would like to take this moment to welcome new listeners of fans of classic cinema.
We meet Sidney Greenstreet as Ferrari. This dude fucking rules. He's also like the big boss man in Maltese Falcon.
Mm-hmm.
Dude built like a brick shithouse.
Oh,
this
absolutely.
Guy. It's awesome. And I believe the scene
more shithouse than brick, but yeah.
Probably. Is he not? He's directing people here to go over to Cafe American. We meet him at the Blue Parrot and he's like, the
you
spies
better go over and talk to Rick. He's the one that's, he can help you. You'll find like what you need.
Everybody
over at Rick's.
Comes to Rick's.
Yeah.
But he does come to Rick's.
So he knows that he's like the gimbals to Rick's Macy's, basically.
Big time. He knows what's up. Yeah. That's why he's like thrilled at the end of this movie to buy the cafe.
Yeah,
his
powers both. The Ian McShane, it's a classic situation.
I mean, it is such a snappy screenplay. Oh, it's one of my favorite screenplays of all time. The writing is just outrageous. And like, if memory serves, it was a real, like, we're like rewriting shit on the fly,
yes,
figuring stuff out. And the fact that like it's pulled off this awesomely is pretty impressive.
Well, that's, you know, it's, I think it's an amazing piece of writing, and it would be great if more people were aware of how like it was being updated all the fucking time.
Right.
Because what do you always hear? That this is the best screenplay that's ever been written, and every screenplay should be this screenplay.
Yes.
What's the Robert McKee guy? He's like, this is the one. This is the one.
Casablanca?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, really? Huh.
By the
Epstein brothers.
Yes.
Well, no, I don't mean it like that, Chris. Everyone goes to Epstein's.
Family.
Yeah. One of them went on to write Cross of Iron, I saw on the old IMDb,
really?
Which was interesting turn.
Yeah. I was gonna,
yeah. Maybe that's an error.
Nah. No, I like Cross of Iron. Cross of Iron rules.
Which one's that?
Sam Fuller?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
With the Lee Marvin?
With, no, it's, what's his fucking name?
Coburn?
Coburn, yeah. Coburn, yeah.
Good movie.
So Renault comes in and he's like, hey, Rick, just going to let you know, man. There's going to be a embarrassing public arrest happening right in your cafe. We're going to make a big fucking deal about it.
Please, oh, please tell me it's that creepy nerd. Please, oh, God, is today the day you're going to kill that creepy nerd in my club?
Peckinpah, not Fuller.
Oh,
that's the Sams, the two Sams. You know them, folks.
I've been really itching to get this nerd out of my club for some time now. See, he's creeping out a lot of the ladies and the men. Everybody, honestly, he sits down at the bar. Two people stand up. That's how it goes.
It's not even the voice, really. It's the eyes. It's the eye. People are just complaining about eyes.
One time, a dog wandered in here. A stray dog out from the marketplace came into Rick's. Took one look at Ugarte, threw up on my floor, and left.
And I called him the sea wolf.
Even animals find this man repugnant.
You see, you see how you're calling the sea wolf? I'm creating what I'm calling the Curtis universe.
Because when you see him, you're woofed.
The CCU, dude, the Curtis cinematic universe.
We're going to have Dr. X in here, too. Don't worry about that.
So he lets him know that that's going to go down. And he's fine with it, but very pointedly, Rick puts the papers inside Sam's piano.
That's right, keeping him there. Meanwhile, Renault's also like, by the way, there's this motherfucker, Victor Laszlo, coming to town.
Yes.
And Bogart's ears kind of pick up right here, like, oh, Laszlo, eh?
Oh,
like,
celebrity.
Very famous resistance fighter, spent a year in a concentration camp, broke out, thought dead. Not dead,
yes.
Coming to Casablanca, and they're planning. Strasser wants to intercept this mother. It's a weird, like, they want to intercept him. They can't legally do anything to this guy.
Yeah.
So it's a real, like, yep, we flew all the way here from France, and we're going to murder this man.
Which but is like, just murder him then.
And also, Mr. Laszlo, hi, my name is literally anything else than Victor Laszlo.
They're going to dinner in the same place with, oh yeah, could I have a table away from the Nazi high command, please?
That is an awesome moment.
Yeah. What's my name? My name is Ralph Dinner Shirt. That's my name.
Hello, I'm Victor Lazbot. Lazbot. It's a Bulgarian.
No relation to the famous freedom fighter, no.
Oh my God, is that a Victor Laszlo? Why, yes, it is. Hi, it's me, Victor Laszlo.
See, and
the Nazis want me dead, you see, and I'm just sitting here letting everyone know it's me, Victor Laszlo.
And everybody thinks it's because he's a freedom fighter and he got out of the concentration camps. And they're like, the reason they're after him is because he's too fucking hot.
Mm.
This motherfucker smokes everybody off the screen, including Bogart, I'll be honest.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's a much more attractive
player. Paul Henri, man. Woo. I believe that's the name. Solid 1940s smoke show.
Hey, Laszlo, how'd you get that scar? Eating pussy?
I was literally going to say that, but I was going to say pineapple. That's the TV edit on the scar face.
Turned too quick into a thigh, you see.
It's interesting that we don't say Jew or Jewish in this movie, right? We don't.
Not a single time.
No. Yes. We say concentration camp a lot, and the threat of concentration camp
Well, it's interesting because Laszlo was producing like anti-German leaflets or whatever in Prague and running newspapers. And concentration camps, obviously, yes, Jewish, but also, like people who were,
But yeah, keep it in mind. I mean, Pearl Harbor, we're just getting our feet wet. We're just seeing how things are going.
Yeah.
We don't want to be, you know.
I mean, it's there. I mean, apparently, like obviously, a lot of the people in the movie were Jewish and were very like, you know.
Yeah. I remember when they round up all the usual suspects, that also includes liberals.
Yes,
that's right. I love Louis Renault and Rick make this fucking great bet where Bogart's like, all right, how about this? If Laszlo gets out of here alive, you owe me 20,000 francs. If he dies in Casablanca, I'll give you 20,000 francs. And it's a great line. He goes, Louis goes, make it 10. I'm only a poor corrupt official. Which I just love. We learn a little bit about Reagan. It's one of those things where, like, it's a little kind of didactic, but whatever. It's people, like, reminding Rick of his own life. And just like, oh, yeah, Rick Blaine, 1935, you were running guns to Ethiopia, 1936, fighting in Spain alongside the loyalists there. You love an underdog.
Oh, Stephen Sadak, 2011, you were a fat guy doing a podcast. 2017, you were also a fat guy doing a podcast. Look at it all. 2022, you're a fat guy doing a podcast.
Fat guy doing a podcast in New York City. Fat guy doing a podcast in Jersey City.
Fascinating. What a dossier.
Such a globetrotter.
2019, fat guy doing a podcast while running guns in Ethiopia.
you gotta wet your beak.
Maybe we should start getting into something a little more cutthroat, a little more adventurous.
I like that.
Our lives have been just stagnant at port for so long.
You're right. We should become warmongers.
And yeah, we should. I mean, because like it was bone chilling to see that his character Rick is supposed to be 37 years old.
Yeah,
and he's already a wealthy owner of a saloon. I only dream of such a thing.
That's the thing. I left America because I had to get away from my student loans, you see.
Fannie Mae was strangling me to death.
Then I moved to Morocco. I could open a club.
I mean, back then, you know, it was an actual lady named Fannie Mae, and she came out with guns and knives, and she was going to come and get you.
I do love that we never know why he fled, and it's more of the enigma there. I mean, presumably, he got money from his exit or whatever. I think there was a line that Renault has about, oh, did you steal from the church or something?
I like Renault. He just basically gives him all these, like, we have these theories. It's either you stole from the church, you did this, or you killed a man. I prefer killed a man because that's more romantic or whatever.
Yeah.
It's also the easiest thing to do. You know how easy it is to take a life, Renault? Want to find out?
Dude, back then you could kill anyone you wanted. DNA, not a thing. You're fucking cum and blood all over the room. No one gives a shit. Someone just mop it up.
You kill a guy, go down the block and not shave for 2 days, you've gotten away with that crime.
Absolutely.
We need to go back, folks.
So, yeah, the cops in.
Yeah, I tried that. But then some asshole wrote M on the back of my jacket. Everywhere I go, some asshole with chalk writing M on the back of my jacket.
Who is giving away all this chalk?
Who?
And I would have got away with it, too. Were it not for that fucking chalk.
Chalk that up to bad luck.
So, the cops come in. They're like, all right, Peter Lorre, it's time to get arrested. And he does this great move of like, let me just cash out my gambling winnings. And then he like, I love this. He walks to the door and like runs out and closes it behind them.
Yes.
And then like kind of holds it for a second. And you can tell he's like kind of thinking like, oh, where's this going to go? And it's like, fuck it. And runs like 2 feet. The door opens and he starts firing wildly back into the club. Meanwhile, Bogart not blinking at all.
Yes.
They take him into custody immediately. I love Reek. Reek, help me, Reek.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to miss that for sure. No, I'm so sad. I'm so sad that he's gone.
Well, I mean, he does, I think, one of his first utterances of, I don't stick my neck out for nobody.
Yep.
Which is a great kind of running theme that he has.
Especially when they sound like a castrated mouse.
Strasser at one point asks Rick what his nationality is. I'm going to start doing this, dude. He's like, I'm a drunkard.
Renault's like, well, that means Rick's a citizen of the world.
Stoner from the old country.
Yeah. Rick, don't embarrass me in front of the Nazis. Jeez. My friend here has had a few to drink. I apologize. Nazi overlord. My apologies.
Have you... I'm sorry. Have you touched the Fuhrer? Could you tell me what it's like?
Oh, man. So, great scene. In the prequel novel, they give him like a super Jewish real name or whatever. So if you want to read into it, there's that.
There is. I don't.
Yeah.
I choose.
I mean,
not
he can
to.
Be Jewish. It's fine.
You could be Jewish and named Rick or Richard.
Exactly.
As well.
Yeah.
There's plenty of Rick Lowensteins out there.
Yeah. Or Rick Blaine, like, you know, the Ellis Island chop jobs. Things happen.
Yeah. Used to be Blaine Kowski, you see.
Or it's a stage name, you know? Because, like, you made fun of an Irishman called Rick for so long that people just started calling you it. I can't get over that. I love that. And, oh, my God. By the way, we skipped over. It doesn't really matter. Ferrari came in and tried to, like, poach Sam to his club. Yes.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Now, Fat Ferrari, he is supposed to be the guy that Wiggum is talking to in that episode, right? Oh, I wish I wasn't so fat.
Oh, is this like kind of like a Big Daddy thing? I mean, maybe a little bit.
The outfit is very Big Daddy-ish.
Well, yeah. Big Daddy was the guy running away with the beard, and he took the kid. But the guy you're talking about is the Hawaiian shirt guy fanning himself.
The fan guy is
I think it's the same episode, but it's different guy?
Yes. Oh, no, it's a different episode, different guy, but it's fine.
Hey, Simpsons, check it out.
There's Big Daddy... And then there's also the other guy with
it's too
the,
hot.
It's too hot today.
Yeah. I certainly shouldn't have said it was illegal.
That's the crusty fakes his death episode. You're talking about the
Wiggum
big
spinoff. Lara, wish I wasn't so fat.
Just to plug here, one of my favorite Mystery Science Theater episodes, Overdrawn at the Memory Bank.
Oh, great one.
Makes much hay. It's a horrible movie wherein Raul Julia basically matrixes himself into a Casablanca-esque area. It is an insane movie.
This, I feel, is like... It's a really big MST3K, and it's a real MST3K blind spot for me. I've never seen it.
But it's... I mean, there is this guy doing... Like, he's... Like, everybody kind of fits archetypes. Raul Julia's kind of bogey. And this huge guy is Ferrari.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And they make a lot of hay about how big this dude is. It's a lot of fun. Just an FYI.
Well, yeah, I don't think outward fat jokes were quite as popular at the time. Like, if a fat guy falls down, oh, we're laughing.
Yeah.
Humphrey Bogart's just being, you really fit around the house, don't you?
Get out of the way, Ferrari, you fat fuck.
He calls him a fat hypocrite at one point. I really like that.
Bet you have your own zip code over here, don't you, Ferrari?
Ferrari still is supposed to be sports car, small, fast.
Hey, Ferrari, what's your belt size, equator?
Yes, it seems that this had a pass by one Abraham Farley.
So in walk Paul L. Reed and Ingrid Bergman, Victor Laszlo, and Ilse Lund. They're looking for Ugarte, and this other like resistance fighter dude comes up to him. I love this shit where he's like, hey man, you want to buy this ring off me, man? I gotta get out of here. And like approaches the table and is like, take a closer look, and opens it up. Dude, fucking sign of the resistance. Uh-huh. Let's get busy.
Mm-hmm. It's funny because the first time I saw this, I'm like, this must be the worst part of being a freedom fighter of any kind, is any person who's like trying to like sell guns or anything is coming up to you. Yo, you want some help? When the guns, passports, no, I'm fine, really. I'm all taken care of.
I'm not doing resistance stuff right now. Now I'm just trying to treat my lady to a nice drink.
Wait till you see these birth certificates.
No, I don't need any right now.
How about a death certificate?
We're trying to get a steak before dinner. I am starving.
Steak before dinner? I picked
it up. Fine.
For dinner.
For dinner. Okay.
For dinner. Well, the Ferrari's starting to get a steak before dinner.
I'll have the steak appetizer.
Oh, man.
I do. Yeah, this is what real resistance looks like. I mean, no, I'm sorry. Real resistance is, you know, putting it in your Twitter bio.
Oh, a little hashtag that says resist.
And somebody wet their diaper this morning. That's really, that's going to bring down all the fascists.
It's getting it done, dude.
It's getting it done.
Yeah.
One fucking neo-Nazi at a time.
Turned out it made them even stronger. What are you going to do?
But so they spot each other. He comes over and she's like, hey, you know, where's Rick? And he's like, I don't know. Haven't seen him all night. You know, kind of loaded horse shit. So she's like, hey, why don't you play some of the old songs? And he starts like doodling on something. And she's like, no. You know the one. The one that like, I guess they must have just had him playing on repeat that whole time they were fucking in Paris.
I'm going to go ball this broad's brains out in the next room. Why do you play As Time Goes By like five times? Make it six times.
Yeah, I'm feeling all right tonight. Six times.
Six times. I won't go twice.
I can have one song play through per whiskey I've had to drink this afternoon. Seven times.
So, but remember, when I'm trying to get her to go, you start playing the Chattanooga Choo Choo because she's out of here.
Because, I mean, you know, kids, today, you know, this isn't Netflix and chill. This is get a man in front of you to play the piano and chill.
Don't mind me, Mr. Rick. I'm not watching.
Was that the whole relationship in Paris? Like,
it seems, I mean, like they were having drinks.
You play piano and I drill her.
I think so. I mean, all the scenes, he's playing piano and he's like, ha, 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 ha.
There's that moment where Strasser talks to Rick and everyone's at the table and they go through like his dossier and they mention that like they also know what he was up to in Paris. They leave it vague.
Yeah.
But are they talking about drilling the lady while a guy plays piano?
I think that's probably for the resistance. Dossier,
Eric, for the resistance.
Yeah, of course.
If we have to, we have to.
Make it a
vow. Vive la France.
But presumably he was doing something more than just having drilling sex. Listening to piano music.
Now, Sham, make this about. I'm about to do some mouth stuff.
That I can do all night long. Even with some chewing tobacco stuck in my lip.
Remember, ooh. Oh.
Rick, you want me to keep playing when she goes to sleep and you're jerking off in the bathroom or what? When does this end exactly?
Hard to tell who's the biggest pianist, Rick or Sam there.
You know, the thing is, I love that it's not particularly spelled out for you, just what he was up to.
Which is great. That's what I love about it is it's all... And, you know, your Han Solo mention, there might be a lot here, right? Like, this is a wretched hive of scum and villainy. Yes. Watch your wallet. Mm-hmm. Banging music in the cantina here.
Totally.
And he's a complicated anti-hero that you don't know all about yet.
Yes, and the whole I don't want to stick my neck out for anybody is very much Han Solo's kind of M.O. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Until he changes. Right.
Gun marathoning, not even gun running, just constantly throwing guns at anybody who wants them.
And he brings his friend of another race who everyone hates.
I do love, this is one of the big, like, Hollywood misconception things is because she never says play it again, Sam, right? It's play it once, Sam, play it, Sam, play as time goes by. That's it. Mm-hmm. It's kind of great. It's
if you could play it for her, you could play it for me.
Oh, that's right.
That's right. But it's kind of funny because this is like, this smokes him out of his little foxhole and he comes out like, God damn it. I thought I told you to, fuck. I got tricked. There she is. Oh, I should have seen this coming.
Oh no. Woody Allen misquoted something. that's the worst thing he's ever done.
One, I don't think Woody wrote that movie. And two, I'm pretty sure that was a misconception before that film existed.
No, I'm going with my version.
That's also, I think, based on a play.
Yeah, I think it is.
So they call it a night. It's like, everybody get the fuck out. And there,
just because it's important to me, there's one moment where Renault, I believe he's talking to the head Nazi there, and he's just like...
Strasser?
Strasser's like, you know, oh man, all the women in Casablanca are in love with Rick. You know, if I were a woman, I imagined I would be in love with Rick.
Yeah. Could you imagine if two men could physically have sex? I mean, physically. I mean, I don't think that's possible.
Am I supposed to be responding to this? Or is just should...
Dude, that would be great if it was like Strasser internal monologue. And like,
what is he trying to say to me?
Is he... Oh my God, he's coming on to me. What
not to self, here? Open a new dossier on Renault.
Move funds away from Laszlo to Renault.
I mean, Renault's got a real Willem Dafoe in autofocus kind
Louis
of vibe.
Louis Renault will sit next to his good buddy and jerk off.
Sex exactly. Criminal.
Mm-hmm.
Take it off. Take it off. Take it off.
I thought you were just going to be working the tripod there.
Oh, now you beat me to death with my own sex equipment.
Sex equipment.
It's sex equipment.
Oh man, autofocus. I'm due for
that's
a rewatch.
That's
a
WLM, dude.
Oh yeah, oh, yes, that movie fucking rules. Mm-hmm. Totally rules. We cut to that night. The cafe's closed down. He's doing a real deal. We're going to be drinking this bottle of whiskey all night long.
God damn! And then Sam comes in. It's like, hey, don't think about her. Let's go. Let's go driving and drinking. Yes. And then when we sober up, we'll go fishing in the morning.
Yeah. We'll go fishing. We'll get drunk. And I'm like, dude, I love it, dude. Drunk fishing? Absolutely.
And you're hanging out with Sam. He's got great stories.
Rick, I know that workers' rights in general don't really exist now, but 3 a.m. to be cleaning up this place is a little bit much to be asking the janitors.
Man, since we were just on tour, folks at home, we were in Tennessee. And Andrew, I think you summed up what a smoking bar feels like better than I've ever heard before.
Which was what?
Which was like when you have your eyes open in a smoking bar, it feels like you're in a pool. Like
chlorinated swimming pool.
Opening your eyes underwater.
Yes, it's funny, right? Because like that's just from, you know, years of in New York, just having that anymore. Your body's just not trained as much. We were in this bar. Steve, you lit up and I wanted to commit suicide. I was so physically uncomfortable.
I wasn't as glamorous as Humphrey Bogart.
No, it was pretty gross.
I'm a fat guy doing a podcast.
Steve lights up.
Play it again, Sam. Shut the fuck up.
I gotta
play it again, Sam. This one wants to buy you flowers, so go ahead now.
Sorry, it was cool as hell for 1 minute.
Somebody out here playing two princes.
I told you not to play that.
Oh, God. I've been in here for 1 minute. I feel like I haven't slept for 4 days. Oh, boy. Okay.
All right.
Of course, also, this is the scene with the famous of all the gin joints and all the towns and all the world. She walks into mine. God damn, this screenplay rules.
And he's great. I mean, look, I was reading a lot of stuff about how corny the dialogue is. And it is, but it's iconic in its way, the way it's delivered. You know what I mean? It's snappy enough. It's the right kind of corny.
It's also kind of hard on sleevey. Like it's not too guarded or cagey. Yes. Like, he's not trying to be smart too often.
But yes, I can see a bunch of film Twitter galaxy geniuses being super cynical and, you know, looking at old Hollywood and
oh man, that line.
per usual, jerk me off forever is my response to those things.
Film Twitter would not be good at jerking people off.
No.
They're kind of sexless rubes, I think.
But if they're going to know how to do one thing, Eric, it's jerking off because they do it to themselves constantly.
That's true. But can they handle my pipe is the question. Listen, I'm drinking. We're doing a show.
About first time we're drinking on the show.
Yes, this is the first time. It's a movie about a bar. And I just don't. I'm sorry. I think some of those film Twitter creeps are...
I agree with you.
Just that. Yeah. They're creeps. Yeah. You don't have to say anything.
You know what they should do? They should get a job pushing up daisies.
I will say this. The flashbacks didn't really play for me last night. The train scene is excellent. I just feel like, I mean, it's nice to see the two sides of Bogart, to see him in happier days. I just feel like all that information could have been gotten some other way and we would have stayed in the seediness of it. Maybe I like the claustrophobia of Ricks and Morocco inescapability of it.
It is like the break. We're breaking away from a play.
Yes,
at this
that's
point,
true. But, you know, otherwise, if we didn't have those flashbacks, we wouldn't have had like 15 moments of here's looking at you, kid.
Yes, it's true. We set that up.
There's a lot of them in those flashbacks.
There's a lot of that.
I think it's kind of nice seeing their love
too. Plot.
Yeah, well.
But that is where you hear it then when he says, it's true to Eric's point. When you hear it later, you're like, oh, that's because he said that so long ago.
It makes it better. It's like a little more effective.
Yes. It's like a double. It's like him saying it twice because I remembered from the time before.
I was saying he does say it twice in the flashback.
Oh, okay.
I think it's twice in the flashback.
But he says it more in the rest of the film, right? Like there's like one towards the end.
He says it at the end of the movie. Yeah.
Got it.
But what I love about it, though, is they're doing a real, like, we're not telling each other anything about ourselves.
Oh,
it's kind of like a weird sort of certified copy situation, almost.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, you know, she starts to say something about her life, and he's like, no. We're keeping it anonymous.
Yeah. Humphrey Bogart just looking directly down into the fucking, hi.
That would be something, dude. But I don't know. It's just that weird, like, we don't want to know anything about each other. It's just it's just about the fuck.
Well, no, he's trying to get information on her, and she's like, no, she doesn't want to. She's being cagey because she's got this whole secret life.
Yeah, they both have seedy pasts, you know, that, like, why explore this? The world is ending, which, I mean, I could see, you know, right now people doing that.
That's what's kind of fascinating to me about the scene, because you look, there's parts where, when it's around the time when he's like, oh yeah, sounds, oh, wow, that heavy artillery is shelling a bunch of people on the countryside about 35 miles away. They're holed up like in an attic, like, or a top, not an attic, but like a top floor of a building with other people hiding out. It's a real, like, we're just drinking and fucking because the world is ending.
Oh, it's so good. I love that when they go downstairs, I guess, they say the inn owner or whatever the fuck is like, he'd rather water his garden with the champagne than let the Germans get it. So it's all for free.
They, between the
get a great deal on booze. Oh my God, my eyes. Where's my daughter? Oh, this is a wonderful, play that song again, Sam.
You know, make it a little louder. It's not drowning out the screams.
Ash time goes, ah!
It's fucking rad, though, dude. It's a real, like, we're getting it done tonight because the three of them are hanging out, and it's Rick, Ilse, and Sam, and they're polishing off a bottle of champagne, and Sam's kind of doing a, after this bottle and the next bottle, we only got two bottles left, because it's like, well, we got this bottle, and then there's three more, and we're just going through them, and I was like, fuck, I mean, guaranteed it's a hell of a time, and you are having a rip-roaring hangover.
Oh my gosh.
Champagne hangover like that?
It's going to be awful.
I don't care how much orange juice you're putting in there. It's not going to work.
But, you know, we can't go back to America because I need to stay, you know, within the line of the German invasion in case more free alcohol becomes available.
It's very important, you see.
Booze is so expensive in America. That's why I'm here.
What's the Desert Fox up to? Okay, North Africa sounds great. Get some booze down there.
How much free booze they got in North Africa?
You think the Germans are bad. Wait till you see the prices on a bottle of scotch in New York City.
Trust me, you wouldn't want to invade. That's why I'm staying around here to get the free booze.
Look, they're all running out of these shops, escaping for their lives. I'm running into the shops, escaping with their booze.
Hold up, Germans. It's already been gentrified.
No paintings. Just booze, please. Thank you very much.
She does at least drop right here. Yeah. She's like, I had a dude, but he's dead. Which at the time, she does believe to be true.
Yeah, there's five reports of his death, apparently. So,
And so then, like, shit's getting hot in Paris. It's like, all right, we got to leave tomorrow. And it's kind of great, you know, and Ingrid Bergman's really excellent in this movie. And the way she plays it, like, she now knows, you know, you'll learn later that she finds out that Laszlo's alive again. That's why she's so sort of, you know, devastated. She knows she has to leave Rick. And, you know, he's like, oh, it'll be great. We'll get married. And she's like, oh, man, you're not getting any of my signals. You're not getting anything.
No.
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
How about even earlier then? How about on the train?
No. Oh, yeah, that sounds great. I'm literally crying at the table.
Sam, you could do it, right? You were a chaplain in the Navy.
Yeah. What does she mean by kiss me like it was the last time? I guess nothing.
Say no more. Nothing. Small ceremony. I get it.
You don't want to invite your parents, baby. I get it.
Just 60, 70 of our closest friends.
We'll just go straight to the judge. We'll just see what he says.
Oh, kiss me like the last time. Because that's the last time you're going to be single, right? Because you're going to marry me on the train. Got it.
This is the last kiss before the next one after that.
Like, and he's just got nothing. And she's like, dude, I know I can't tell you right now because, you know, of all of my intense emotional stuff going on, but you really should pick this. You should not be quite so surprised on the train.
Yeah, no, I mean, I guess that's true. I mean, I love the pounding rain. Oh, and it's Sam so good. Comes up and he's like, she left this note for you, and she reads it, and it's like, you know, my dear Rick, I love you. I got to leave. I can't tell you why. Yada, yada.
You're going to get the corpses, Ilse?
Yeah, yes. Yes, Rick, I'm going to get the corpses. But I love it.
Oh, my God. She just wrote me this letter. Ordinarily, I would definitely fight her on it, but I can't say. She's got to take a shit. You know, that's it. I got no retort to it.
Wow, that's the universal relationship breaker right there. It's a perfect excuse, baby.
Ironclad, Sam. Let's catch that train. Well, she's got to take her shit.
There's no toilets on the train, Sam.
I feel like that's a fucking Mad Magazine parody bit where it's him and then they cut in and it's just, I have to take his shit.
I never said I was better than Mad Magazine.
No, why would you? Mm-hmm. Say crazy things like that. What are you, cracked?
Mm-hmm. And the rain is coming down.
Oh, yeah.
And the paper, you know, I gotta take a shit is is smudging in the rain, and you're like, I'm glad this is covering up his tears. You know?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It's. I love the shot of the train starts moving, and Bogart, the most casual, the most fuck off, crumples it up and just tosses it.
And I feel like Sam was on the train like, oh man, that sucks, Rick. You probably never want me to play that Time Goes By, right? Never again? Because that song got fucking tired of that song.
Yeah, you never want, you'll never be reminded of her, right?
Yeah. So
You hate it, right?
Every time I play it from now on, it's going to bring up painful memories and open huge wounds. I don't have to play it anymore, right?
Yeah, you're a Chopin man now, right?
Classical music or bust.
At the bar, as they like it. No more Chattanooga choo-choo, just Chopin and Bach.
And so then, like, that's the end of the flashback. It cuts back. Bogart, way more in the sauce. She comes in, and this is a real, he's like, so tell me one thing, baby. Any other guys in between me and him or what?
Oh, yeah.
Were you married?
Yes. Because he's like wasted. It's kind of great how wasted he is. She's like, this is her being like, I'm going to do the thing. I'm finally going to tell him what's what. She's like, fuck this guy. She leaves. It rules.
There's also this little thing. I mean, it comes to a head eventually, but the publisher's visa sweepstakes that this young couple that's going on. This is the one thing where I'm just like, I get why it's here, but I don't care.
I love it. I love this little bit of deceit. I do. That comes a little bit later. They have
the Bulgarians.
Strasser has told them the night before.
Oh, right.
Come to the precinct and we're going to talk things through or whatever. Oh, right. This is where they show up. And Strasser says, all right, Laszlo, like, I will let you two leave Casablanca to go to Portugal to get on the boat to go to America. You can escape. You can be free, whatever. And he's like, the only thing is you have to give up the name of every resistance leader in every European country where one exists, you know? And he's like, do you know me at all? Yeah. Do you really think I'm going to go for that?
Yes, we're just going to slip it past him. See if he doesn't notice.
He
says, you know, I was stuck in a concentration camp. They tried to give that information. What odds do you have doing that here?
Yeah.
Well, then take him back. I just think it's crazy that they never nabbed the dude.
He walks in and out. Like, it's just like, I don't know. Like, I mean, because he's using the same name. Like, it is sort of insane. Like, the Nazis are playing fair.
I guess
the one time the Nazis played fair.
They love rules. Yes. Maybe that's it. And they went into a place with some rules and they were like, all right, we're going to play this game fair. Maybe it's a sporting thing. Like, this is chess for Strasser.
We don't just shoot down people we don't like. Only a crazy person do that.
Laszlo's got a great line though where he's like, all right, well, if you kill me and kill them, thousands will rise up and the resistance will be stronger. And he goes, even Nazis can't kill that fast,
which is awesome.
I'll take that bet.
I do. There's this great, it's a Renault line. I think it's here where he's just like, explaining the fate of Peter Lorre. Like,
oh, yeah.
And he's delighted. He's just like, you know, I don't know if I want to write down that if he committed suicide or if he was murdered during his escape. I'm not sure. And it's like,
oh, and now Jeffrey Epstein, I don't know if I want to write down he committed suicide or he was murdered during his escape.
They just, it would be great if, like, oh, this whole, like, scene is going on. Someone opens a door behind him and it's just full of blood.
Yeah. But this is where, this is the real fucking gross Louis moment where they're like, so basically Laszlo and Ilsa are like, get fucked, Nazi. We'll see you later. And they walk out. They don't take the deal. And then some fucking cop comes in and he's like, oh, you know, Captain Renault, another visa problem has come up. And Renault does a, oh, send her in, and looks in the mirror and does a little tie adjust, and you're like, dude.
Yep.
Oh, gross. Dude, that sucks.
Oh, man. The amount, just, it's just ridiculous. Right? Like, the amount of unwilling people
he's a hero in the movie. I mean, like, he's an anti-hero, but it's like, no. Nah.
It's like you're supposed to smile when you see him, and I do, because it's fucking Claude Rains.
Because it's okay to have complicated, problematic characters in your movie.
Thank you.
You're right, though, because, like, just the idea, you just said it. He's in a meeting with a Nazi. The Nazi is like, this is what I want you to do, you son of a bitch. You're like, you know what, Mr. Nazi? I don't think so. Me and my wife are leaving. And you just leave. Like, that's not how Nazis work, as I understand it.
But but you kind of have to imagine there was an audience who was going to see this in 1942 being, they were a little rude to the Nazis, I thought. I thought they were just a little rude to the Nazis
That's true. They would. You know,
what is the fucking, the Henry Ford family watching the movie?
Yes.
Well, they treated that Nazi like shit.
There were a lot of sympathizers throughout the United States. It's actually, you know, I think,
briefly,
honestly,
Charles Foster Kane himself.
Yeah. I mean, they had a rally at Madison Square Garden. I just feel like the concentrated effort of the studios to compliment them on something, I feel like, helped the war effort in a real way, because there was no internet or television. Yes.
Yeah.
I guess there was television, sort of.
You paint them as villains and people understand them as villains.
Exactly, which maybe we ought to start doing.
There's a great, I noticed a funny sign in the marketplace. There's a scene where Rick goes to the Blue Parrot for some reason here. He's arguing with Ferrari about like cartons of cigarettes that he never got or whatever. It's more about like, Ferrari's like, you know where them fucking exit visas are? And he's like, no, I don't. But there's a sign in the marketplace that I was pretty sure translates to lingerie king.
Yes.
Pretty awesome.
And this is when she is trying to get it's a fun little market gag. She's trying to get a blanket.
Oh,
and
yes.
And he's like, oh, it's like $800, 800 francs. And then like Rick comes by, like, you're getting ripped off. He's like, oh, Frederick's 400, 200, whatever. It goes down.
Yeah.
And this is when he's trying to apologize to her. And she's like, get fucked. Like, it is a real, like, I tried last night, dude. You were wasted and I'm not in the mood for it today.
Is this where there's the exchange where she's like, I don't want to tell you something. And he goes, you can tell me now, I'm reasonably sober.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
I got to start using that one, man.
Because they're going to go to Ferrari and trying to get these exit visas.
Oh, that's right.
And then, like, Ferrari's just like, sorry, dude. That Rick, of course, it's got to be Rick, Mr. fucking 1 year in Morocco. He's got the exit visas. He's got the cool piano player. And I just got fucking, you know, I ordered this pong table. It's a ping pong table. I thought that would boost morale here.
Been here for 7 months and he got the cherry press on the rum. Can't believe it. Can't fucking believe it.
But don't worry. Ferrari and his blue parrot. What do you got? Bunch of really great crudité on every table. Awesome. Good job, Ferrari.
Oh, I guess it's back to the illegal drug trade for me.
Don't tell me we have a ventriloquist act tonight. Please don't tell me that. I'm going to throw up in the bathroom.
That's it. I'm closing this place down. I'm turning it back into an opium den. Back to an opium den.
You're telling me that the Nazis went to the other club? Well, we're finished. Well, we're just finished.
I took one look around the dining room. There wasn't a single Nazi in sight. I'm washed up.
All the tastemakers are across the street.
Poor old Ferrari washed out of Casablanca.
What are these handsome young influencers really into?
And all Rick's America. All I've got is Spaniards.
I love, we go back, you know, a lot of going back to Rick's, sure, of course, because it's a play. But we go back, and I love, we go back via the pickpocket coming, yeah, back into the movie, and he bumps into Carl. Carl, the German waiter. I great. Fucking love this guy. German dude, resistance fighter on the sly. And he bumps into him, and it's this great Carl being like, oh, that's the village pickpocket, and immediately feeling, yeah, for like all his belongings. Yes. That's such a great gag.
He notices someone else got pickpocketed, but that's fine because that's life in Casablanca. That's all right. Fair game. Yeah. You got yours and you're okay.
I mean, they're modeling their actions after their boss, right? Their fearless leader, right, Carl. Yeah.
Don't put your neck out.
Also not sticking his neck out. I mean, I guess the fact that he's part of the resistance is a little different. But yeah, in the day-to-day interaction, it's like, oh, that guy got robbed. Yeah. That's a bummer, but my wallet's still in my pants.
Yeah, Rick taught me this move. What I do is I tape all my money to my body every morning to ensure I'm never ripped off.
That's right, sweetheart. I got all my francs on my nipples. Just tape them right on them.
Oh, you need some change? Let me just slap my tit really quickly. Some francs to come out.
Yeah. Coming up in the world, I had to put some money on my thigh the other day.
Yeah, I got Deutschmarks really on my dong.
Running out of limbs. But around here is where we have the sequence of Rick helping the young Bulgarian, yeah, couple. And I think it's kind of boss, man.
Yeah.
A good, crooked gambling table in a movie, I'm all about it.
Yeah. This really does paint Louis as the monster because this, yes, lady is ready to fucking kill herself.
And she's like saying, like, Rick, is it a big deal? Like if I love my husband, but if I like fuck this villainous Frenchman to get out of the country and I just keep to that myself, is that okay? And he's just like, now you got to bet on 22. And then he rigs it all and they get all of his money.
Yeah.
And buy the papers.
It's a moment where Rick's like, oh, God damn it. That son of a bitch, Louis Renault's fucking diddling girls for exit visas again. Well, guess now I have to lose all my money to help these people or else he's going to get diddled.
God damn it. My best friend is trying to have sex with all these girls now. Son of a bitch.
Well, it's pretty shitty. And he says that he's, Louis comes in and says he's a rank sentimentalist for doing that. And he's got a blonde coming in there tomorrow night that I hope she loses.
I think this is right, that this lady is played by Jack Warner's like stepdaughter or something like that.
Oh, the young Bulgarian girl? Oh, really?
Man, nepotism.
But it's also, you want to break in? Here's your big role. Yikes.
Yeah. Speaking of Jack Warner, it was an interesting thing I noticed when the Warner Brothers logo comes up at the beginning of the movie. It's like, it is the Warner Brothers shield logo, you know, and then it's inside the logo is a Jack Warner production, just fucking smeared right across the logo. It's so crazy.
And he outran the guy at the Oscars to, there's a producer that really produced, I forget the dude's name. And he like, Warner just basically shoved him out of the way and got in first. Halby Wallace. Yes.
At the ceremony.
Yeah. Wallace never forgave him and he quit shortly thereafter.
Oh, that's weird. Where's a Mank-esque tale like that?
Oh, that'd be great. I think the Warners would be an interesting movie adaptation.
Yeah,
oh,
they lived in the water tower.
They had a bunny and a frog that came visited them. And
oh, I was thinking of the Animaniacs. Yeah. Excuse me.
But no, that's how Jack Warner sees the world because he's constantly on drugs or something.
That's just speaking of opium.
It's my sister, my cat Dot.
I do love, it's kind of funny, like, Sam really must have been itching to play as time goes by because now the fucking floodgates are open. Uh-huh. In this scene, when they go back out in the main room, he's playing it again. And if I was a regular at Rick's, I'd be like, God, what is that guy's problem? He's playing as time goes by again? He played it 6 times last night. Mm-hmm. He's already played it twice since I've been here.
I mean, how many times can you do this land is your land, this land is my land? I mean, how many do they have in this repertoire? Fever hasn't even been made yet, right?
So Laszlo himself offers Rick 200,000 francs for the papers. And he's like, I'm not going to sell them to you. And he says, is there a reason you won't sell them to me? And it's a really quick... Ask your wife.
Jesus.
Oh, man.
Well, you don't even need to say that because I know what that means. Awesome. Cool.
Yeah, dude. And ask your wife is that, yeah, we were boning.
Yeah, exactly. It's not like, oh, she broke my favorite fucking chair. It's like, yeah, she broke my favorite fucking chair because we were balling her so hard.
She grabbed my pipe, you see. But in this moment is one of the absolute greatest moments in the movie. It's one of my favorite parts. The dueling national anthems.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Anthem off! Anthem off!
We got an anthem off! It's so great. It, you know, they walk out of the room and the Nazis are doing their thing, singing about the fucking fatherland and whatnot. And then,
but first of all, it's a real downer. You know, let's be honest. We're real trying to have a good time here.
From a certain point of view.
Yes, you know. I suppose.
Depends on what side you're on.
But in
those
moment,
four or five guys are loving it, is what I'm saying.
No, they are having a great time singing this tune. And then Laszlo is like, oh, yeah, watch this shit. And this dude goes down to the band. Because the Nazis have sort of occupied Sam's piano, and they got some dude playing that.
This Sam's piano has been occupied.
That's what I was going for. Yeah. Yeah.
Little flag on.
Yeah, they do.
Two guys are standing by it all the time.
Swastika stenciled on it.
Yeah. You have taken your piano.
You can no longer play any more of your little ditties. But then, yeah, so we start off with La Marseillaise, and these Nazis get outsung, dude. Yeah. The whole rest of the bar is like, fuck yeah, this is the way better country theme song.
It's like
known as a national anthem. But
in a lesser movie, someone would get cake thrown on them at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Or like the Nazi would fall into a big cake, like, oh, I'm never coming back here again.
Why did fucking Groucho Marx pop out as
possibly?
I think now I'm rusty on this stuff. Deutschland über alles was the anthem, and this is like on the Rhine. I think it's
on the Rhine.
A little different.
They were afraid of playing the former because there was like some copyright stuff that anyone could get sued by all these Nazis.
Yeah, that's also why we can't do the happy birthday song in movies.
Those greedy ass sisters. Yeah, man, they're Nazis too.
I was gonna say they're probably the same people that own the copyright.
Absolutely, yeah.
They got in early on a lot of songs. Yeah. But this is when the Nazis are so mad they go up to Louis, like, have this place closed, and like, I don't care what the reason is. And this is Louis, he's like, you're closed. Like, what the fuck? It's like, I didn't know there was gambling going on here.
I'm shocked to find gambling in this establishment. God damn.
Here's your winnings.
Yes. It's, oh my God, it's the fucking great comedy right there. The timing of that, the execution, the dialogue. This is a great script. I'm sorry.
That is so awesome.
That exchange is actually how I first knew about Casablanca. Because on VHSs, they used to do like 50 years of movie.
Yes.
The scene they would always show is that.
Really? That's funny.
That little scene.
Because you know what's interesting? I wonder if part of that is because that is like the delivery of such is a really still now like contemporary feeling delivery.
Yes. Yeah, that's true.
You know, it's like, I'm doing one thing over here and it's very serious. And then like rapidly someone comes up, and then the joke immediately follows. Well,
it's a Simpsons gag. You know what I mean? It's like really, it's that quick, that sharp.
Yeah. Yeah. It's another one of my favorite parts of this movie.
Hey, you want to make an 8-year-old laugh in 2 seconds flat? Here we go.
Yeah, exactly. So now he's like down in the dumps. Ilsa finally, Laszlo's going to go to a meeting. He explains that he can't get the papers. He said, and like Laszlo, I guess like Laszlo kind of knows is the idea because he's just sort of like, he said to ask you, and I guess I won't do that because you did whatever you had to do kind of a thing.
Yep. Yeah. You thought I was, and it's like, yeah, man, she thought you were dead in a concentration camp or breaking out of one. Mm-hmm. Five different sources confirmed you.
Laszlo's a cool dude here. He could be a real dick about it.
He said something about a chair and a pipe. I'm not gonna press too much, but those could be euphemisms.
There, were you? I'm sorry. I need to know. Were you part of an offshore drilling operation? Oh no! Oh, I get it now. I feel stupid. I shouldn't have said anything. I was dumb. Forget that.
Gotta work the pipe.
There is a real like, why did you even bother move by Strasser around here? Where he's like, yeah, you know, Ilsa, I can provide safe passage back to occupied France for you and Victor. And she's like, What are you, fucking stupid? Like, how dumb do you think we are?
It's not a concentration camp. It's a fun summer camp. Come on.
I do love the idea of, like, beating a Nazi outside of state lines. Like, ha, ha, you can't touch it. He's like,
my not jurisdiction.
Exactly. He's like Buford T. Justice jumping on his hat because he can't get him. I'm like, I just don't think that's how Nazis work.
Uh-oh, those resistance boys are at it again to poor Major Strasser.
Oh, man.
But yeah, so they...
Rick instead of the General Lee, it's the General de Gaulle. It's the car.
Yeah, instead of the little banjo hit when they fly off the thing, it's like a symphony going off.
Wagner yes. Just starts blaring.
Boy, those French boys are really in trouble again, aren't they?
There's a moment here, you know, again, points for Rick being kind of a cool dude here, where he's weighing a lot of options. And one of the things is, like, we're going to have to, like, because the bar is closed and it's like, yeah. Well, is it like a indefinite closure? What's going on here? And he asks Carl, like, how long can we stay open?
It's these damn COVID mandates. No, it's absolutely not.
I think Carl asks Rick, like, how long can we stay open?
Yeah.
No, Rick asks Carl, how long can we stay open without
two
going
to
into business?
Weeks.
He says, like, 2 weeks. And Rick is like, okay, that's fine. Keep everybody on the payroll. And that's like,
what a good guy.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. You know, Carl's very excited. Mm-hmm. He and his wife are, you know, or no, I always mix this up. Carl has those drinks with that German couple.
Yes. Who are trying to practice English for when they get to America so they can fit in. And moment of comedy when it's like, what watch is?
Yes.
Oh, watch 10. Oh, so much.
And Carl, cool. They're also angling a threesome. It's their last night in Morocco. Absolutely. They've been eyeing Carl for a while.
Looking to get some fucking strange with this big guy over here.
Trying to gum it one last time.
Look, Leslie, there's a lot of desperate people in Morocco.
Carl keeps his options open.
Oh, yeah. He strains his tie when he sees an old couple walk in. He's like, I'm going to fuck these old people.
Oh, yeah. Another mark for Carl. Another notch in the old belt for Carl.
The meat and the sandwich.
No, but it's actually, that's interesting because it's another moment of Carl looking out for Carl because he, fluent in German, you know, very much related to these folks, notices the language slip up, doesn't correct it, and is just like, yeah, you'll be fine in America.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah, you'll be fine. Yeah, you're speaking real good.
He would have closed it faster if he negged them right there.
Oh, you know? Yeah, nice English, moron.
Yeah, and then suddenly one of them's working his pipe, the other one's fucking tonguing out the back plumbing.
Do you know how to fart and yell at people? You'll be fine in America. Don't worry.
That's all you need to do.
That's why I left, sweetheart.
Carl goes to the same resistance meeting Laszlo goes to.
Yeah.
Ilsa takes this moment to go to Rick for one last plea. This is the huge turn scene where she pulls a gun on him.
Oh, yeah, which is great.
Baby, you're making me hot as a rock.
Oh, my God, how'd you remember this? Pushing my buttons real bad.
Listen, one of us is going to shoot tonight. It's either me or you.
Press it to my temple and let me take my business out.
She starts saying shit like, oh, you know, what about the cause you once believed in? And he's like, I'm the only cause I believe in. I was like, ooh, that's good. That's another good one. And then he's like, yeah, I'm going to die in Casablanca, baby. It's a good spot for it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They really should just cut to the Richie Aprile Janice Soprano.
Oh, yeah.
On the couch.
Can I tell you, that is one of the most stunned I've ever... It's one of the most... I've ever been stunned watching
hell
television.
Just hell of a cut.
It was just like... I didn't know people did stuff like that.
Yes. Was it like 16 or whatever? What the fuck?
I was like, that's some twisted shit. And thank God I didn't get hard.
Well, sure. Yeah, that's always the gamble.
Because watching that man, like, you could see it. Like, a wire gets crossed in somebody's brain. And now it's like, I can't shoot unless you hold a gun to my head.
Thank God Richie Aprile is as stable as they come.
That's true. Yeah, he's a real level-headed guy.
And you know, she basically finally tells him the whole story, and you know.
And now, do they fuck here? I guess is implicated kind of later because when eventually at the airstrip, he's talking to Lazo. Listen, see, I fucked her last night. And but that's that.
That whole, the whole thing there with like him saying shit to Laszlo, though, is then flipped by Renault, who's like, did he know you're so full of shit right there in that moment? Okay. And he's like, I don't care, baby.
Yeah, it's unclear if they fuck here.
All right, let's say that you fucked them, Louis, all right?
It's a big cut, and then later we're smoking cigarettes talking. We don't know what might have happened.
It's a weird time jump that I noticed in this moment, because it's like the middle of the night when we're scheming after the underground meeting and everything, and then he says something to Renault about like, oh, yeah, well, just make sure something tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah.
And then it cuts to the next day already at night again. Yeah. So it's a weird passage of time.
Something.
I don't know that it's a flub. It's just a weird movement. Yes.
Man, they cut out the scene where Ingrid Bergman's picking pubes out of her teeth.
Man! You know that was some real Bogart Bush, too. Man. Oh, my.
Absolutely.
I ain't shaving for nothing to nobody.
I mean, we all had winter bush back then. It was, you do that, it makes you, that's a girl stuff. You know, you let it grow.
Yeah.
Hey, here's looking at you, kid. Let's see if you can find Bigfoot in the forest.
So like the way Rick sort of plots it out to her is like, don't worry about it. We're going to get like Laszlo to the airport or whatever. And then I'm just going to make sure he goes and then we can be happy together. Definitely don't worry about it, Elsa.
And this is when he starts scheming. He tells Renault to come back and he's Laszlo gets arrested for like some trumped up charge because like the Nazis are like, oh yeah, we can do whatever we want. And Rick's
they accuse him of being an accessory to the murder of either the couriers or of Peter Lorre. Well, I don't remember which one.
And they're like, oh yeah, we have this trumped up charge. And he's like, Renault's like, I got a better idea. He's gonna come here tomorrow to buy the papers. You catch him in the act, bing, bang, boom, you've got him. And if I'm Renault, I'd be like, it doesn't matter. I can charge him with jaywalking and slit his throat. You understand what's going on here? You know what I killed Ugatu for? Jack shit.
It's a great Bogart line when they bust in to arrest him, when he goes, seems destiny's taking a hand. Oh, yeah.
On the pipe.
All right, everybody, hands on pipes. Here we go.
Why does he keep on bringing up pipes? Is somebody a plumber in here? What the fuck is going on?
Yeah, you got to call them throbbers. Show a lady your throbber.
Yeah, like me and Mary talking throbbers. See, Rick, you just got to go, hey, Elsa, look at my throbber.
Not about that pipe. About the throbbers.
A pipe can't throb.
I'll pull down the moon for you, Mary, on the other side of the moon, because the moon's an ass is a throbber.
Oh, my pipe's not at your house. It's Ugaru's house.
Whoa, I'm afraid of heights up here on this massive throbber. Got vertigo.
There's a great thing where, like, in, like, fake getting his affairs in order, Rick fake sells the cafe to Ferrari. And it's a funny, like, do you want it in writing or is a or he says, do you want it in writing or is a handshake good? And Rick's like, well, time is of the essence, so I guess a handshake will do, fat boy.
Yeah.
Which is great because that means he will still have the cafe when this whole scheme goes off. But he does negotiate with him. He's like, by the way, like Sam gets 25% of all the profit. And he's like, I know that to be 10, but fine, 25 it is. And he makes him guarantee again that all the staff stays on as part of like the sale deal. Really looking out for these people that work for him. I appreciate it.
Sam disappears, unfortunately. I kind of want him to... I don't know, like maybe at the end when Strasser gets it and then there's some other Nazi and then Sam comes out with piano wire and kills him. That'd be kind of cool.
Was this The Simpsons that did an alternate ending there where he kills Hitler?
The Critic.
Oh, yeah. The Critic. Right. Yeah.
Great show, The Critic. Look it up, children.
What is the thing, though? Isn't there a Simpsons gag where it's like we changed endings of movies for old people?
There was a Mel
that
Gibson
is The Critic?
That's The Critic, yes.
Okay.
Wait, no, but there was a Mel Gibson episode of The Simpsons they change Mr. Smith Goes to Washington where he kills everyone.
That's right.
Oh, right.
I think
but
I got
in The Critic, it's like they're on the plane, and
it's not Turner, it's fucking Duke trying to make all the
happy
endings for every movie.
She jumps out of the plane with Sam, and
he's
got
playing
parachutes.
The piano while they're parachuting. That's right. Oh yeah, Duke Vision or whatever it was. But so yeah, we get to the airstrip. It's the final amazing final scene of this movie. We get out there. Renault thinks he's like got everything covered. Uh-oh, the gun is on him. Well, the gun's been on him since before they go to the airport. Yes. They get to the airport, and then it's like he's already called Strasser because Renault here is like, oh yeah, let me call the airstrip.
Oh, I think Strasser intercepts the communication or something.
I think he just directly calls him though. Oh, really?
He calls him.
Because he's like, hello, Major Strasser here, and he's like, yes, get the airstrip ready for the plane leaving to Lisbon. We're going to have Victor Laszlo on it, definitely. And it's kind of hilarious because Strasser, he doesn't say exactly this, but like he should know that it's Renault. Yeah. When he gets to the fucking airstrip, he's like, what's the meaning of that phone call? And it's like, dude, get the net.
But even
I don't know English.
Even better, you get to see this Nazi in traffic, which I really enjoy. He's like, move.
That is pretty great.
They need, instead of Laban's room, they should get a Laban's highway, Lord Almighty.
There is a great, before we leave.
No.
Before we leave for the airstrip, there is another great line where Bogart's like, and remember this gun, I got this gun pointed directly at your heart. Renault says, well, coincidentally, that's my least vulnerable spot. Kind of great. Yeah. But yeah, maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, yada, yada, yada. Strasser going for the phone. I mean, this is all great. He's like, what is the meaning? Oh, it's all of you. Okay, better call the rest of my Nazi buds.
Yes.
Step away from that phone. I'll fucking shoot you. I promise I will shoot you.
But I mean, maybe not today. I mean, it is like played to death in terms of American pop culture. It's a great series of, of dialogue that he's giving to her, and she's playing it really well. And it is... It's like romantic, but it's almost anti-romantic because it's not about like romantic love. It's about, fucking the world is a piece of shit. And sometimes you got to fucking put on your big boy pants and not get what you want.
As the Hot Fuzz people would say, the greater good.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I mean, that's like, it's a movie that's like, fuck all your love shenanigans.
Yes.
We have to do better for humanity.
Exactly.
Right here.
And that's the last time we ever thought about it.
Yep.
Well, look, I would really like to have sex with you again, but you've got to go where with Laszlo. You've got to go. I would just love to fuck you again, but no, you've got to go with your husband.
Don't worry, baby. Maybe in 70 years, some maniac will write a follow-up book and we'll be joined together again on a new adventure.
That's right. So Sam, Louie, and him all go to London, and then
London, that's what it was.
That was like the staging ground for their other exploits in Europe.
Sam
stays in London, though, apparently.
Once Strasser dies, Sam comes out, sings Yankee Doodle Dandy, and then, this whole speech happens. And then Renault, the Renault ending is amazing.
I gave away the only woman I ever loved for the greater good. But I'm not wearing a piece of cloth over my face. That'd be crazy. That's infringing my freedom. That would ruin my life. Get a totally safe vaccine? No, sir.
A booster? What's that?
Yeah.
Sounds nefarious.
Listen here, fella. I already took the polio vaccine last week, and I'm not taking another one. I mean, I did it then, and it was good, and I liked it, and now it's cured. But now, I'm not doing it now.
Man.
Why? I don't know.
Because I've got points.
Yeah, see, I don't care that President Trump, who I love, helped be instrumental in making it. I don't care.
Major Strasser has been shot. Round up the usual suspects.
So
fucking
good.
Great.
Just shooting him. And then, of course, like, you could turn a blind eye to anything.
Anything.
Yeah. It's so funny because, like, the dude gets wasted by Rick and drops dead. And then this fucking other, like, Nazi dude, or maybe he's just a... unoccupied France, Renault goon comes around the corner like, hey, thought I heard something. Oh, fuck, there's a body here.
Yeah, this guy ran into a bullet. I don't know what happened.
Ran right into it. The damnedest thing.
I don't know what to do, but you should take care of him.
Technically, he killed the bullet.
Put that dead body on trial for murder of that bullet. It'll happen in America.
The bullet was just passing through and he ran right into it. Fucking maniac.
He ran right into my bullet and he killed my little bullet.
No. Make sure he stands up in the witness stand. He's got to be standing up in the witness stand. Get Andrew McCarthy to prop him up.
Andrew McCarthy. Oh, we're going to burn. He's got it. Got it. Yeah. So then they just, they talk about the bet that they made and he's like, well, we're going to need that 10,000 francs because, you know, we got to travel. And he's like, yeah, I thought I'd go with you. We both need to definitely get out of here.
No, what we're going to do is a weekend at Bernie's thing. Strasser's got this sweet pad back in Berlin Alexanderplatz or whatever. And we're going to take him there and prop him up.
Uh-oh, the Fuhrer is coming over for dinner. We better make it look good.
All these Heils are really doing a number on the fishing wire.
The Fuhrer's
dead. His arm ripped right off.
Rick? Something fishy is going on in this apartment.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll never figure it out.
That's right, man. Fuhrer, we're serving fish for dinner.
Oh, I love fish.
That's the end of the movie, Louis. I think this is the start of a beautiful friendship. Walking off into the fog. The same fog we met at the beginning of the movie.
Fucking great, dude. Yeah, it's just cigarette smoke.
Totally. Yeah. Oh, the boys were smoking in front of the lens again.
All right, boys, light up the spliffs. We got an ending to shoot.
Yeah, we'll call it fog. It's fine.
Hotboxing this airstrip here.
Hotboxing.
Yeah, but that's the end of this great movie. We'll go around. Final thoughts and new things learned from this, your second viewing, Steve?
It's just great. I mean, it's kind of a perfect movie. I just think the performances are fantastic. The script is as advertised. I just love how morally complicated it is and how it is. I mean, it is romantic. Like you do feel like, but romantic love does not exactly conquer all. And I think that's why it's so enduring. Cause it's not a fairy tale. It's more realistic. It's like, you know, you guys fell in love in the wrong time twice and it kind of sucks. You know what I mean? And it's awesome.
Chris Cabin.
Yep. I mean, what Steve said, absolutely. And there is something about seeing all this, like this is a very, a very big time period in the movies. We like talking about this time period in the movies quite a lot.
Yeah.
So like, it's weird to see it so not coded. Like you've spent so many years seeing all these codes of what this is, what you're supposed to think about these people and these people, but it's not here. It's kind of primordial. Yeah. And that's what makes the drama so beguiling. Like I'm engaged with it the whole time because I don't know where it's going, at least the first time at least. And I mean, acting is fantastic. Great movie.
Yeah, for them, it's like present day they're riffing on, so it's a bit different. I think it's a great movie. I think the only thing you could really knock it for is like the cultural osmosis. Like you know a lot of the lines before you end up seeing the movie, probably. Yes. I think even I saw this pretty young, but I still knew the lines.
Oh, yeah.
That it gets a little play-y, but I don't mind it, and I think it hums along. I it's hard to fault this movie. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean I've said this before, like plays adapted into movies are really hard for me to give a shit about.
Yeah.
This one is not the case. Similarly with another Bogey film, Key Largo, which is another play, and it's another we're in a hotel in the Florida Keys the whole time. Really great movie. I would say if you have this on home video or can rent it or whatever, most of the Blu-rays now come with the Ebert commentary. And it's only he did a couple of commentaries for things, but this one and the Citizen Kane one are the ones that I remember. But it's like, if you're a big Ebert fan, it's a cool thing to listen to. I was listening to a little bit of it today. And like the dude was just really passionate about this movie. And it was a nice, like hearing Raj talk about something that he really loved.
That's awesome.
Kind of a thing. So that's sitting on most of the home releases. It's also a movie where I find new things in it all the time, like just little, it doesn't have to be a huge thing. It's also just like little details here and there, which is kind of great. One of which I had forgotten about, but I was reminded this time. I love Renault at the end. It's like, wow, what a great adventure. I need a drink. And he starts pouring the Vichy water. Oh, and then he notices it's Vichy water and he throws it in the trash. Yeah. The detail I forgot about.
Now, is that wine from Occupied France is the idea?
Soda water.
Soda water. And they just named it after the, I guess.
Vichy water, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know enough about
I don't know the what Vichy. The impetus was for doing that. But
it's a good moment.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, that is Casablanca, ladies and gentlemen, for 1942, directed by the great Michael Curtiz. Check out other movies that he made.
Hell yeah.
Dude, totally underrated director. I think so much so that there's a special on the Blu-ray also called Michael Curtiz, the greatest director you do not know, something like that.
His early stuff is actually on streaming now. HBO Max and Criterion both have a lot of his. Dr. X, The Mystery at the Wax Museum, really good early stuff from him.
It's weird because I read a little Andrew Saris on the way down did not understand why he was a great director. He was like, oh, this is the exception to the auteur theory.
Oh, weird. His fucking theory's bunk anyway.
Yeah, it's very true. It's very true.
But this is just the first of several great WLM conversations we have lined up for the entire month, including on the Patreon. We will have a We Love Movies on Ridley Scott's Alien coming very, very soon.
Yep, we also got an animation Damnation on Toy Story.
That's coming out this month.
Eric, we got some Nexus happening.
We have the Star Trek, the next... No. Star Trek Generations.
There it is.
The movie. I get so in the TV mode for when we talk about the Nexus, but every December we break it out and we do a movie. You might have heard we released on the main feed a few months ago one of our previous ones on The Wrath of Khan. So if you like that, you definitely need to get on the Nexus for this banger of a Star Trek Generations podcast.
Yeah. And over a once in a lifetime, we are going to be talking about an absolutely demented piece of
God, I forgot about
George
that.
Wendt nonsense called The Merry In-Laws.
And that's about like Santa Claus's son is like banging a lady and he's going to get married. And now Santa himself, George Wendt,
he's
going to inject himself into that scenario.
Absolutely.
As is Mrs. Claus, played by Shelley Long. It's a Cheers reunion.
That's right.
And we have a commentary on American Movie coming out, a syncable comedy. This is a great month.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Give us $10 and get everything. We got a Melro coming out. We've got, and I think probably either at the end of this month or the early next month, the Boba Fett podcast is going to start up.
That's right. People have been asking. We recapped The Mandalorian. Every episode has been recapped on the Patreon feed. And people have been wondering, are we going to do the Book of Boba Fett? Yes, we are. We'll be doing an episode for all 7 episodes of whatever that TV show ends up being. Also, the Gleep Glossary this month of December. Little story about a guy named Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Wow.
Yes.
That might be a big boy.
Yeah. And if you're unfamiliar with the Gleep Glossary, I read stupid old Star Wars canon to these guys, and they say mean things to me.
And you say mean things about the characters in the stories, I know.
But I want them to... people like me being a punching bag, so they will love the Gleep Glossary. Sure.
And here on the main feed, of course, We Love Movies Month will continue into next Tuesday. Steve, what's cracking there?
Yeah, we started with one of the best movies ever made. Let's keep it going with Sam Raimi's Spider-Man. No, it's not one of the best movies ever made, but the movie fucking rules.
Good time.
You'll get a nice reappraisal, because I think a lot of the younger people are like, that movie's silly, and I'm like...
What, the Ought 2 one, really?
Yeah, I think that's a lot.
I mean, it's similar to Casablanca. We greenlit it right after 9/11.
No. We greenlit it before 9/11.
That was the big poster problem. I'm excited for that. Of course, we're doing that because No Way Home
is
coming out. So this is Sam Raimi doing it right. Rewatched this in quarantine.
Yes.
I'm telling you, it still holds up. And of course, the greatest gift of all, speaking of fucking autofocus, Defoe going fucking Defoe crazy.
Yes.
So that's going to be a lot of fun. Until next week with Sam Raimi's Spider-Man, I'm Andrew Jupin.
Steven Sadak.
Eric Siska.
He's cabin.
Take it easy.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.